Start recording now, I guess. Oh, we got him.
I think he's here.
Yeah, I believe he is here. Burke Johnson, could you move Christopher Cole over?
Yeah, I've made him a panelist.
Thank you, appreciate it. Chris, is it okay to call you Chris? Anyway, is that you, Chris, right there?
This is me, hello.
Hello. Is it okay to call you Chris?
Absolutely.
Thank you. 1 second, sorry about that. All right, counselors. Chris, thank you for applying for the Civil Service Board. We really appreciate that. We have some questions that I'll run through in this process for you, and then counselors may or may not have questions for you as well at the end of what my questions will be.
Sure.
Are you ready to go?
Absolutely.
All right, here we go. Number one, do you have a personal or financial interest, direct or indirect, with the Civil Service Board, or are you engaged in any capacity whereby a conflict of interest may arise?
No.
Great. Please give a brief outline of your educational and work experience. How will your background experience benefit in relation to the Civil Service Board?
So I've worked in HR for the past 6 years. I graduated from University of Wisconsin-Stout in 2016 with a degree in management. And my concentrations were business management and human resource management. I then got my master's at Southern New Hampshire University in human resource management. My first job in HR, well, I worked at Walmart for 20 years up in Hermantown. And then the last 3 years there, I was in their human resources department. And then I went to ISD 709 for about 2.5-ish years. And now I've been at UMD for about since June of 2021. So I'm currently at UMD as a recruiter. But at ISD 709, I did a lot of work with contracts and stuff like that. I think on the non-certified side, I had about 7 different contracts from paras, clericals, maintenance, food service, transportation, all that fun stuff. So I think just with my background with contracts and job descriptions, working in HR, I think I'd be a great fit for the Civil Service.
Thank you. Why are you interested in serving on this particular board?
You know, I enjoy working in human resources. I've got a degree, my master's in it. I enjoy, one of the things I kind of miss in my recruiter role is interpreting the contracts and, diving into job descriptions, kind of trying to decide what's what and what should be in them, what shouldn't be in them, how to interpret the contracts and so on.
Great. Thank you.
Yep.
Do you foresee any personal scheduling conflicts which may prevent you from attending the meetings regularly?
I don't think so. I think I read it's the first Tuesday of the month. So, only once a month commitment, that's pretty easy to get into and show up consistently.
Great. Thank you. What do you consider a personal strength you would bring to the board?
Well, I think just my background in HR. I've worked in HR for 6 years. I've got up to education master's. I've worked with contracts, bargaining units before, job descriptions. I enjoy the work too, so I think that would be a great strength to bring to the table. And also, I'm sure there's lots that I can learn from being on the Solo Service Board, too.
Great. Are you presently serving on any other board or commission? If so, which one? Which ones?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Is there anything else you would like to add concerning your possible appointment to the Civil Service Board?
I don't think so at this time.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Those are my questions. Counselors, up to you, Counselor Kennedy.
Thank you, Chair Vanette, and thank you for applying. My question is, what part of the city do you live in?
Currently, I live in Duluth Heights, up off of Rice Lake Road.
Okay. That's the only question I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Kennedy. President Forsman.
Thank you, Chair Vanette, and thanks for your interest in this, Chris. I really appreciate that. I'm just curious with your background, and full disclosure, I was an HR guy once upon a time, too. But I also worked in on the union side as well. So I'm curious if there ever was a conflict where something came up and you had to sort of make a decision with both of those different vantage points coming at you, how you might filter that information and be a neutral party.
Sure, that's a great question, Eric. IC-709, the HR manager was the one who kind of made the decisions on like the grievances and the negotiations, but I did sit with them at times and kind of go over different material and stuff and give my two cents at least of what I think would be the right proper way. And either it'd be a training session where they'd be like, Chris, that's a great point. Maybe it would be this way, but if you think about it from this angle instead, this might work a little bit better. Or maybe they would agree with me. So I've never had to make the decisions myself, but I've been in there to help for my opinion.
Yeah, I appreciate that answer. Thank you, Chris.
Yep. Thank you very much, President Forsman. Chris, Councillor Tominick.
Thank you, Councillor Bennett. Chris, I have a question for you. I'm so grateful that you applied, much like all the other councillors, and really appreciate the depth of background that you have in this. So what motivates you to take on even more on a volunteer basis to serve the city and give up some of your free time? What's the motivating factor there?
Sure. I was born and raised in Duluth. I graduated from Duluth East. I just love this city. I'm very proud to work at UMD. I'm a big Bulldogs fan. I worked there. I worked at the Duluth Public Schools. I went to East, Ordine, Leicester Park. Grew up out there in Lakeside, Leicester Park area. I've never really given back yet for anything. And I think it's just time is due. I think it's my time to at least somehow serve my community and, not only give them some of my knowledge, but hopefully I'll gain some knowledge back from this too.
I really appreciate your answer. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Tominick. I am not seeing any councillors' hands in the queue over here. I'd like to give it a breather just in case you all change your mind. And seeing none, I would, if memory recalls myself, this will be on the agenda Monday, correct, Vice President? Yes. Okay, I'm seeing headsets. This will be on the agenda Monday for our consideration. I really appreciate you coming. This is really, really, really great. It's a big deal to serve on these committees. I've done it. It's where I come from. So, awesome. So much. Thanks so much. And we will be in touch with you and see you on the agenda.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone. Take care.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah. Thank you, Chair Vanette. We'll take a 4-minute break and see you at 5:15. Cool.
74. Who's safe around the world? You driving me and then heading back to Proctor, or me just going? Right. And I was like, I'm only driving a vehicle and brief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We live here. It snows. It's just how it is.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I guess crazy to get up early so my parents are there. I'm going to go out.
Okay. That's where I would connect
to. Right, all the days. Not okay. Yeah.
So, avoid the hills downtown.
Like that's.
I feel like that's like the.
That's the biggest issue. Like I used to hate going up to Proctor.
Yeah.
And back down, I just have because it's just a straight hill, full way, you know, and I would just panic. But going once I get to Superior, it's just.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one nice thing about West Oakland, mm-hmm. There's like no hills to deal with.
Why did you get down this little?
Pretty much. Good. Yeah.
How long was it like that? Walking around with
toothpick in your shoes? Can't say I noticed, but admittedly, I don't know with your shoes. Sorry. Start video on my what else is that? Oh, yep, that turns on the console.
That was
it doesn't really matter, but.
Alright, we'll get going here. Does not look like there are any puppies in chambers, Mr. Johnson, but I am still missing you all. It's good evening, everybody. Thanks for being here. We will start with our agenda items at item number 7, which is under Vice President Kennedy's name for finance.
Thank you, President Forsman. I'm Resolution 169 is a resolution amending Resolution 220103R, adopted January 24th, 2022, to add state funding for the Northern Lights Express project as a legislative priority for the City of Duluth in 2022. And if I may, President Forsman, Councilors, I'm going to read the body, a few of the whereas. The City of Duluth is a member of the Northern Lights Express Alliance, and whereas the Federal Infrastructure Investment Act of 2021 provides for significant funding for intercity passenger rail projects, and whereas a 20% funding match by the state of Minnesota could leverage 80% of the necessary funding for the Northern Lights Express project, and whereas funding bills for the Northern Lights Express have been introduced in the Minnesota legislature for the 2022 legislative session. So therefore, be it resolved, the council will be reaffirming in support from Northern Lights Project. So further resolved that resolution number 210103 establishing the City of Duluth 2022 legislative agenda be amended as follows. And so as you, hopefully if you had an opportunity to look, there's an addition that's underlined, and it's underlined actually farther down in the on the resolution. Be it further resolved that the City of Duluth also supports the following local and regional initiatives. And I won't read all of them. I just wanted to make sure you understood that this is on a long line of other things that we support as a bullet point, and it's underlined. And so I would love your support for this. There are many folks who have worked really hard on this project for a number of years, and they're doing really good work. And I do serve on the Alliance Commission and really look forward to continuing the work. So I'd love your support on Monday. I'll yield for any questions. I don't know that I can answer any technical questions. I know you all should have received a call from some of the board members, and I would reserve that right to have them give you a call if there's not anything that if there's something that I couldn't answer. So I'll yield.
Thank you, Vice President Kennedy. I am not seeing any questions in the queue, so thank you for the good explanation, and appreciate that. There's a lot of momentum around funding for that project this session. All right, so we will move on then to item H under Councilor Owl's committee.
Thank you, President Forsman. Resolution 143, resolution approving the transfer of the on-sale intoxicating liquor license from Range Restaurants LLC 310 Pub to Up North Taps LLC 310 Pub 310 Lake Avenue South. And I yield.
Very good. Seeing no other counselors in the queue, we'll move along to personnel under Councilor Van Nett.
Thank you, President Forsman. Counselors, item number 9, resolution 136, a resolution appointing Councilor Forsman to the Duluth Economic Development Authority. Item 10, resolution 137, resolution confirming the appointment of Tayaki, Desiree Singer, and Francis Wittenberg to the Duluth Human Rights Commission. Item 11, resolution 138, resolution confirming the appointment of Christopher Cole to the Civil Service Board. Resolution 156, item 12, resolution confirming the appointment of Benjamin Van Tassel as Director of Administrative Services for the City of Duluth. Item 13, resolution 162, resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of measurement services supervisor, including a title change to utility services supervisor and specifying contract benefits for same. Item 14, resolution 163, resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of recreational specialist. Item 15, resolution 164, a resolution approving proposed specifications for the new civil service classification of blight mitigation specialist and specifying contract benefits for the same. Item 16, resolution 165, a resolution approving proposed specifications for the existing civil service classification of city auditor. Item 17, resolution 166, resolution approving proposed specifications for the new civil service classification of risk management and specifying contract benefits for same. President Forsman, I have some questions on number 12, if I may.
Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, President Forsman. Mr. Schuckman, I am wondering, and specifically about the item number 12, will there be a separate city clerk position this time?
President Forsman, Councilor Van Nett, yes. There will be. Currently, Clerk Johnson is serving on a provisional basis, and should Mr. Van Tassel's appointment be approved by the council, then that is one of the items that he will have on his plate moving forward in the director role. Certainly the mayor and I will be involved in that as well.
Great. Thank you. Also, if, for example, if a department that the director of administration oversees, example HR, if they have a specific issue with said director, what's that process like for safety of other employees and people may be having issues with that particular position?
President Forsman, Councilor Bennett, if I can just clarify, are you asking that should someone in this position, and I assume not specifically Mr. Van Tassel, have a concern about them that needs to be raised, what is the process? Am I understanding that question correctly?
Even more clearly, if somebody in HR has an issue with that particular person that oversees HR, how does that work for health of the organization and for employees? What's the process for that?
President Forsman, Councilor Bennett, thank you for the clarification. Certainly, if that were to occur, that is something that an employee could come to me with a question that they had and or a concern that they had, and also the mayor as well. And that would be the option that would be available should that happen.
Okay. Thank you so much. That's all I have.
Thank you, Councilor Van Nack. Councilor Medved.
Thank you, President Forsman. Mr. Shuckman, just touching base on the same topic. will the structure then change for the entire clerk's office as far as one individual overseeing licensing and other components of the department, and then the other half of the workload be divided amongst elections and other things, or will the entire structure and job duties change throughout the entire department from Mr. Van Tassel's position to the other two positions?
President Forsman, Councilor Medved, I appreciate that question. I don't expect there will be an immediate or there's no specific plan change. I have served as a department head in a different city, and one of the things that I believe very strongly is that Mr. Van Tassel will have the opportunity to assess the organization that he is responsible for and then work to make adjustments as he deems appropriate. And certainly that is a conversation I have very regularly with department heads and I'm very involved in. But I really believe strongly in giving our city leadership the opportunity to assess a department and make structural changes to job responsibilities that they deem to be correct and appropriate.
Thank you. And I guess, I just think, last year went phenomenal with elections and everything. And I would hope that, moving forward, we have one individual that really takes part in elections and oversees, the operation. And so we can continue moving forward, on a smooth path with elections. So that was just my only inquiry. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Medved. Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Forsman. Mr. Shuckman, I had a question just regarding Mr. Van Tassel moving up from planning here. Should he be appointed to this position? Is there any plan to rehire for the exact position that he's vacating, or will there be sort of a restructure within the planning department at all and combination of roles? Just kind of curious what the plan is.
President Forsman, Councilor Mayo, thank you for the question. That is a conversation that Director Fleege and Deputy Director Fulton and I have been having, and they are working that through. I will say that Mr. Van Tassel moving out of that department is a significant loss for the department and a significant gain for the city. And so I'm excited about that, but I do recognize that there is an impact on planning and economic development. And so I've spent time and will continue to spend time with Director Fleege and Deputy Director Fulton charting the best path forward. But no final decisions have been made at this point.
All right. Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Seeing no other councilors in the queue, we'll move on to Councilor Randorf and Planning and Economic Development.
Thank you so much, President Forsman. Item 18, Resolution 141, is a resolution authorizing
the proper city officials to enter into sub-recipient funding agreements with SOAR Career Solutions, ISD 709, Duluth Adult Education, Community Action Duluth, and the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities on behalf of Lake Superior College for Employment and Training Services funded through the state of Minnesota's Pathway to Prosperity Grant Program. Item 19, Resolution 147, is a resolution authorizing a subrecipient agreement with New Burnham LLC to fund historic window replacement in the historic St. Louis County Jail for amount not to exceed $240,000. Item 20, Resolution 149, is a resolution authorizing a development agreement between the City of Duluth and Crawford Excavating LLC for the development of property on West Skyline Parkway east of Highway Number 2. Item 21, Resolution 151, is authorizing the City of Duluth to submit an application to Deed Minnesota Investment Fund in connection with Cirrus. Item 22, Resolution 153, is a resolution regarding the support of Job Creation Fund application in connection with Cirrus. Item 23, Resolution 154, authorizes a tax abatement with Cirrus Design Corp. for the redevelopment of the former MRO facility at 4600 Stebner Road.
Thank you, Councillor Randorf. And I will note that Mr. King from Cirrus is with us tonight as well. Councillor Tomanek.
Thank you, President Forsman. Can I ask that Resolution 141 be pulled from consent agenda? I will have to recuse myself from that vote because I'm the president of the Lake Superior College Foundation Board. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Tomanek. We can do that one of two ways. We can do it the way that you just asked for, with pulling it from the consent agenda and then just voting separately. You could also just note that you are abstaining from that particular resolution when we go to pass the consent agenda. I don't have any preference. I just wanted to point that out for everybody, since most of us get into a conflict of interest point in time at some point. Okay, so I see three other counselors. I did not see the order, so we'll go with Vice President Kennedy first.
Thank you, President Forsman. I have a question on Resolution 147. Could you give me a little background on what we are actually authorizing? Who's the subrecipient? New Burnham LLC, and is the city paying for this? Oh, you.
President Forsman, Vice President Kennedy, this is pass-through funding from the State Historic Preservation Office. And so it is going to that project for window replacement, and the city is the pass-through agent.
Very good. Thank you, Vice President Kennedy. Councillor Medved.
President Forsman, item number 22 regarding the support for the job creation regarding Cirrus. I guess my question is, you know, of course, that entails employees, you know, creating positions for employees within their operation. But does that also pertain to creating jobs within the community, using local businesses, local trades, stuff like that to employ others? Through, let's say, you know, just any portion of business to source local.
President Forsman, Councillor Medved, Director Fleach has been the, forgive the pun, the engine behind the work on Cirrus. He has done a tremendous amount of work to bring us to this point. And so he will have, I believe, a better handle on what the specifics of this item are. And so I'll ask him to chime in at this point.
President Forsman, Councillor Medved, yes, the job creation fund. Well, let me first of all start with any type of public assistance will have community benefit goals that will be required for the number of employees that are part of the contracting force that actually does any of these, the capital improvements. But for the job creation fund specifically, the applicant is the business. So Cirrus is the one making application, and but the local city needs to provide a resolution of support for their application. And we do have Mr. King available to speak tonight as well. And Cirrus does a great job of using local supply chains wherever possible. And yes, these jobs, you know, what is within the, you know, their application and the expansion is they anticipate at least 80 new positions being created, will be available, to employees. And really that's a very conservative number. They anticipate really this expansion will facilitate many, many more than 80, but, and I think your question was specifically, does it require them to facilitate businesses? I think Mr. King could probably address, you know, more succinctly the types of businesses in the area that that help support their operations. But, you know, they have planes that are landing, so Monaco Fuel is fueling those planes as they come, as customers come in to pick up or to, you know, visit at the Customer Solutions Center. And with that, maybe I'll encourage Mr. King to answer any specific question.
You, yeah. Mr. And Mr. King, I just want to cut in really quick and say that, you know, one specific, you know, topic I wanted, you know, and had on my mind was, you know, I do use local vendors for my operation, and of course, sourcing equipment is really tough nowadays. You got to wait months to get equipment. But luckily for my stores, some coffee equipment came available because Cirrus left a certain vendor and opened up, you know, a lot of equipment for me to utilize within my operation. And so I said, oh, well they're growing. Why would they not use, you know, a local vendor? And it was, I think, brought up there was a vendor being used outside of the city, maybe in Minneapolis, wherever it is. But I guess that one just got me thinking and saying, hey, you know, how or why are we not utilizing or sourcing local vendors, you know, for every aspect of the operation? So I guess that's kind of where I was trying to get at this point. So thank you.
Certainly. Yeah. So thank you, Councillor Medvin. I think before we go to Mr. King, I'd like to invite you to say a few words here tonight. I just want to ask Councillor Anderson or Mayo if they had a question unrelated to Cirrus.
Mine is unrelated.
Okay, why don't we go ahead with yours, Councillor Anderson, because I could see where there could be more questions that come up related to the Cirrus topic. So let's knock yours out first, and then we'll go to Mr. King.
All right, thank you, President Forsman. So mine is on Resolution 149. Related to the Duluth, the Crawford Excavating development agreement. To the best of my recollection, this is the first time that council has heard about this development, and I am curious to get any background that we might get. I don't know if it's from Director Fleege or Mr. Van Tassel or Mr. Shuckman.
President Forsman, Councillor Anderson, I will start, and I will, in fact, kick it to Director Fleege. My understanding is this is a small housing development that we are not, I don't believe, financially involved in as a city, and so I'll ask Director Fleege to chime in and provide additional information if he's able.
Yes, President Forsman, and yeah, I apologize. I'm still traveling home in the weather. But President Forsman, Councillor Anderson, yes, COA Shuckman is correct that this is a small development that does not have public assistance involved. It's just moving through its normal process. And I can get you more specifics, but yes, it is a development, I believe, for, you know, it's not multifamily. I believe they're single home developments is what they're proposing, is my understanding. But I don't have all the documentation in front of me, so I can send something out to council to give you more background and to work with the individual planners that did the planning study.
Thank you, Director Fleege. And for full transparency, Council received an email with some background information from a citizen around this question. And so the question was brought up about appeals process to the Planning Commission. And I'm curious, I know this was according to the resolution, it was approved by the Planning Commission on a 7-0 vote. But there is, it's a small development, yes, but an exceptional one in that we'll have 5-acre lots in a pretty amazing, it seems to me a pretty amazing area of the city. But that's somehow there was controversy about an appeal to this approval. And I'm just curious if there's any background from the administration on that.
President Anderson and Councilor Anderson, is the city attorney on? Is Rebecca St. George on? She might be able to address that. I think she's familiar with that, with the specifics around that appeal and how that was handled.
Attorney St. George, I see you're unmuted, so I'm assuming you're working out your mic.
Can you hear me now? You can. Thank you.
Which, if it doesn't work, it would be hard for you to confirm that.
True. Thank you, President Forsman. Councillor Anderson, there is some statutory language in case law that led to the conclusion that the appeal.
President Forsman, if I may, it seems that we may need to circle back with councillors on this, and Director Fleege can do that tomorrow and provide additional information to you.
They can hear me?
Yeah, you're unmuted.
Sounds good.
Are you not able to hear me right now?
Councillor Timonic, I saw your hand go up. Was that related to this item?
No, it's related to Cirrus.
Okay, very good. Is that okay with you, Councillor Anderson, that we'll circle back?
Yes, thank you, President Forsman.
Okay, very good. So let's shift gears now and go back to the topic of Cirrus. And Mr. King, I wanted to welcome you, and if we could unmute him so that he has the ability to share a little bit more with us. I see that that has happened. So go ahead, Mr. King.
Thank you, President Forsman. For the first issue here is, can you hear me? Good, you can. That's good. I have a statement here that I'd love to read in just because it provides some color commentary and some background that gets to be important with respect to the application for the JCF as well as any additional funding with respect to this project, specifically under the but-for test. So if that's all right with you, President Forsman, I'd like to just read a brief overview, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then I would be honored to answer any questions, including the local sourcing question that was also asked. So President Forsman and city councilors, we appear tonight before you in support of the proposed tax abatement resolution. It's a critical and an essential component to the expansion here in Duluth, our world headquarters for Cirrus Aircraft. As you know, we relocated to Duluth from South Central Wisconsin back in 1994, and at that time, we were a kit aircraft manufacturer with a total headcount of approximately 20 individuals. We selected Duluth as our new corporate home after a national search for a place that we could grow and prosper as a young company with big dreams of entering the certified aircraft manufacturing marketplace. In 2008, we had grown to become the largest single-engine aircraft manufacturer in the world. The leadership position came by way of having a world-class platform in the single-engine aircraft technology. But make no mistake, the real secret behind our success has been found in the men and women that make up Cirrus Aircraft. Our remarkable team of professionals have made us the envy of every other aerospace manufacturer in the world and have led us to this remarkable success. Our leadership in the industry is found in every aspect of our design, testing, and prototyping, as well as production. This mantle of leadership permeates every aspect of the aerospace industry, and our efforts to reach into areas that continually challenge conventional design. Every day we strive to source and identify new opportunities to address everything from the use of alternative fuels, emerging technology and design. providing for systems integration, including innovative safety features that we incorporate into all of our products. These features currently play a critical role in safety of flight and our ability to expand our market reach. Among some of the less known aspects of our design and engineering efforts are a national presence to help lead the aerospace industry to new and higher standards. In addition, we're also leading efforts in the areas of environmental sustainability, not only in our products, but also in our manufacturing efforts, our engineering, and our world, our visions for our corporate future home. We're active leaders in our industry through memberships in many organizations, one of which is the General Aviation Manufacturers Association. We have several of our staff members in leadership positions within that international organization on committees that monitor and help encourage develop of sustainable fuel technology and to further efforts in improved environmental responsibility. But our industry efforts include more than use of alternative fuels and improved designs to make our products more fuel efficient, though these are certainly foremost on our minds as we develop new products for the market. We continue to innovate in areas of manufacturing techniques to reduce our carbon footprint and create a culture of sensitivity to our wonderful lifestyle that we all enjoy up in this region and truly on a world stage. The recent natural gas issue here in Duluth is actually an excellent example of this. We were able to offer to the city up to 45 million BTUs of energy via our own internal systems to help alleviate that potential gas shortage in the city of Duluth. And we offered to do that when we heard that the issue had arisen. The request before today is in no small measure toward furthering our long-term strategic goals. The use of an all-available structure at the Duluth International Airport has been identified as a potential site to house a portion of our needed expansion. The structure, as you know, is a single-purpose structure designed and constructed for use by Northwest Airlines as a refurbishment facility to maintain their large, wide-body aircraft. The facility has for many years been less than fully utilized, and it's economically unsuited to meet other market demands and has been a drain on the city's of approximately $500,000 per year. Future use of the facility is limited not only by the single purpose design, but also the need to have a new tenant invest significant resources for any alternative use. This, combined with the enormous initial investment in the construction, results in an estimated tax value of the facility exceeding any reasonable real estate market. In addition to the taxable market rate, tenants on the airports aren't allowed to own their own real estate. We do own the structures, but we do not own the ground upon which they sit. Therefore, the tax rate on our buildings is fully valued at and burdened at the full tax impact rates, but then further burdened by the fact that we end up paying, in addition to our tax burden, we pay an additional fee in the form of rent. This effectively creates an unfavorable double burden disadvantage to airport users, and therefore our incentive to invest in this building and adding it to our campus, we find ourselves requesting the tax abatement as a means to assist in bringing this building into a reasonable value to help justify the economics and investment that this structure will require as we contemplate our expansion. We believe with the substantial private investment we're prepared to make into this facility, we will be able to bring this aging infrastructure back once again to life as a productive part of our operations center and to increase the long-term useful life of the structure. We hope to expand our innovation and operations into this resource center. We currently estimate this effort will require several million dollars of investment into remodeling and renovation to make it suitable for our use. As we've grown from the modest 20 individuals to the current workforce of over 1,200 people here in Duluth, we've achieved the enviable status of the best large employer in the region for the last 5 years running, something we're very proud of here in Duluth. We also enjoy the ability to be engaged with so many notable and really worthwhile causes in our region, including the world-class educational entities of Starbase Minnesota, the Scott Anderson Leadership Foundation, Lake Superior College Foundation, as well as other very specialized and critical social programs, such as Angel Flight Central, who provides no-cost transportation of medical patients to and from treatment centers around the country. These and many other charitable causes benefit from the group of men and women that make up Cirrus Aircraft and create one of our community's now longstanding pillars of economic vitality. We thank you for your time and for the opportunity to speak to you tonight, and we'd be more than happy to address any questions you have. And with that, Mr. President, if I may, I would like to specifically address Councilor Medved's question about local sourcing.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Mr. King.
Thank you, President Forsman and Councilor Medved. The one thing I can't address the issue specifically tonight about the coffee machinery. What I can tell you with absolute confidence is that Cirrus makes every effort to source locally when it makes sense to do so. We certainly wouldn't do it at extraordinary peril, but we certainly make an effort to do that. And I'm proud to sit here tonight and tell you that we've never built a structure in Duluth that did not have, as one of the components of our contract, a labor agreement specifically tied to the construction project that we've undertaken. I would even go so far as to point out that the last project that we did, that we started and is still under construction today, is the expansion to our paint facility. There were no labor agreements that were timed nor slated to be acted upon during the period of time for which the construction was going to take place. And we knew that. But we were the ones that specifically reached out and met with Craig Olson from the Labor Temple, and specifically had a very deliberate discussion about making sure we signed a project labor agreement, because we felt it was the right thing to do. Quite frankly, we end up with first-rate buildings. And if you haven't been through the structure, you probably wouldn't appreciate it, but there's nobody that would walk through our buildings. Nobody would ever walk through our buildings and say anything other than it is truly a world-class building, appropriately understated in its design and intent and structure, and yet carries with it what we define as our founding principle in all of the construction we undertake here in Duluth and elsewhere. And our creed is this: we want every building we build and every project that we're associated with to generate and demonstrate enduring real estate value. If 30 or 40 years from now, our buildings look like so many buildings that are manufacturing oriented, they start looking like some kind of World War II reject or some leftover from World War I, that's not a net win to us. We wouldn't be proud of that. Part of what makes us the leader in our industry is we're proud to have our staff come to work every single day in a facility that they can be proud to call their working home. And that obviously by definition means we are sourcing those contracts locally and with the appropriate and appropriately structured entities. They're not fly by night. They are world-class organizations of people like McGuff or contractors like Krauss Anderson or some of the other major Lakehead and some of the other major manufacturing major contractors here in the community. So we're honored to source what we can locally. I can't address the specifics of about a coffee pot, but I can tell you that we make great efforts to make sure that we are taking care of our own, because quite frankly, that's good for us. I hope that answered that question sufficiently.
All right, I see a head nod. So thank you, Councillor Medved and Mr. King. I believe Councillor Mayo has been in the queue for a while, so we'll go to him.
Thank you, President Forsman. And I'd just like to start really quick before I get to my questions about Cirrus here by saying I agree with Councillor Anderson. I would really appreciate having more information about the appeal process for Resolution 149, and then also just more information about that project in general would be really helpful for my context on that one. But in regards to Resolution 154, I just had a couple questions. I know that there is a project labor agreement that will be in place for the construction of any construction of new facilities or things that go on in that MRO facility that needs to be done construction-wise. But I was curious, and I don't know, maybe Attorney St. George might have context on this, but is there any kind of precedent for requiring that when we give abatement that there would be a union at this facility, or if there was a unionization effort that the employer with these new employees they would be hiring as a part of this would be neutral or supportive of a such effort? And then my second question Just to get that one out of the way really quick is, in terms of the facility sustainability, I was curious if there are any specific plans for that large building, the MRO building, and how that's going to be kind of brought into the fold of our climate conversation here locally in the city. I could see maybe significant potential for solar or alternative forms of energy production being used at that facility, and just kind of curious what might be in place moving forward for that. Thank you.
President Forsman, Councilor Mayo, let me start by saying, dealing with the second question first, having to do with the sustainability factors in that specific structure. That structure is massive, absolutely massive. And how the requirements for trying to figure out how to make that usable for airplanes that instead of a 90-foot hangar door require a 16-foot hangar door, you can about imagine what that we're scratching our head trying to figure out how to make this whole thing work. And we're getting there. I can tell you we have mapped virtually all of our significant buildings that we have, not only here but elsewhere throughout the United States. All of our buildings we have actually mapped, and we've got we know exactly what our carbon footprint is in each one of those structures. And we have got as one of these most significant standards under which we will start the process of redesigning and actually executing the build inside the MRO facility, what we're now calling an innovation center. That innovation center's design, number one design criteria will be everything we do, we want to have measured against a sustainability effort and a reduction in a carbon footprint to try to figure out how we can make sense out of heating that building without it being the $400,000 drain on us that, quite frankly, it is to you today, right? I mean, Dita's been footing that bill. You guys, of all people, understand the tremendous drain and the cost to try and heat and cool and operate a facility of that just mass space inside. It's mind-numbing. So clearly, we've got a vested interest in trying to figure out how we, every time we execute a contract for doing anything in that building, I can assure you it will be with an eye towards how can we mitigate the huge cash drain that generates just to keep the doors open and the lights on. So I can assure you that's high on our list. It's the number one priority as we start the redesign effort inside the walls of that structure. The second question you raised has to do with organized labor. And I don't want to get into too much detail on it other than to say we do not have an organized labor group up at Cirrus Aircraft. And I will tell you, we have never had really an issue relative to it. I will tell you that we take very good care of our employees, which is the single biggest reason why labor unions exist. Because they don't get treated fairly. And I will tell you, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a staff member at Cirrus Aircraft that doesn't feel like not only they're treated fairly, but that they feel like they're part of a family operation and a group that cares about everybody from the penthouse door to the shop floor and everybody in between. We see ourselves as being part of a very large family operation at some level. I joined when there was 20. In huge respects, you still have that sense of we're part of a team. It's not 1,200 people. It's a team of 1,200. And that's a pretty cool thing to be able to sit here and be able to say to everybody tonight. I'm proud of the corporate culture we've developed over the last 25, 28 years that I've been affiliated with it here. And I'm excited about where this is going. I would argue or I would ask you to be sensitive to the fact that the reason we don't have an organized workforce or labor force on campus has nothing to do with the fact that we're pro or con. It has everything to do with we care about our people, and there's nothing that matters more to us than our people. We've got a great design, but a great design poorly executed would be a mediocre success in a market. We're the envy of the entire industry, and it's not because we've got a cool design. Cool design poorly executed is just mediocre product. We have got a reputation worldwide for being the aircraft you want to own if you're going into the marketplace. And that's why we are. I mean, when you think about it, having the world's largest anything in our community, we should all be proud of. And I'm very proud of the fact that nobody else in the entire world, no city can boast that they have the largest aircraft manufacturer in the world in their yard. And here we are, right here in Duluth. I'm a Duluth kid, right? I get it. I'm proud of that. I'm always intrigued by speaking publicly, like down at the Capitol, and telling people that we're the largest in the world, and have them look at me and say, "Really?" They have no idea that the largest aircraft manufacturer in the world in this class is right here. It's not Wichita. It's not Vero Beach. It's right here in Duluth. I think that's pretty darn cool.
All right, very good. Thank you, Councillor Mayo. I have two questions since I don't see anybody else with their hand up right now. One of them is for Director Fleege, which hopefully you have arrived home safe or are still traveling safely. And then the other one could be either for Mr. King or Mr. Fleege, but I'll start with that. So for you, Bill, or for Chris, could one of you help give us a little bit of an outline of what the county approved earlier this week? And can you confirm that it was contingent on the city's approval? That's my understanding, but I just want to make sure.
Yes, President Forsman, that is correct. The county approved $600,000 in abatement, similar to ours, $60,000 a year over a 10-year period. And again, as Mr. King laid out, the scope of that was really to address the capital that will be required to convert this single purpose building, which is daunting. There have been a number of things done up at the MRO that DITA took under, to help with some of the efficiency upgrades. But the nice thing about Cirrus moving into this is that they will be focused very much on right from the get-go. I mean, it's an option for them to purchase the building, but really they're taking the approach that likely they will be purchasing the building, and their investment strategies are all tailored around that. So, President Forsman, you are correct. County took action contingent upon Duluth matching. You know, typically the process is the local entity approves abatement and then it goes to the county. But because we want to have this position so that Cirrus can move forward expeditiously, we are, we did it in the reverse order, but the county commissioners were concerned that obviously Duluth, needs to approve it as it's contingent upon Duluth's approval for county to move forward with their abatement as well.
Thank you, Director Fleege. And the second question is for you too. So I think this is an exciting project. There's lots of reasons to be supportive of it, specific to just the job creation at Cirrus. But the other piece that we haven't talked about that I wanted to ask you about is about the holding costs for the MRO facility that DITA has been incurring. And I just want you to give us a perspective on how much that has been and what DITA could be doing, just relative to the size of those funds in other capacities, if you had that freed up.
President Forsman, it's an excellent point. What's a little different is DITA, when AAR left, DITA has owned that building since Northwest had control of it, when they left. So our ownership, it exceeds the 9 years, and as an economic development authority, normally our properties are tax exempt because we are, holding properties for economic development, and clearly that was what the case was up at the MRO. But this year, we became, the county notified us that we would be taxed just as if, we were a for-profit entity. So the carrying costs increased significantly. So historically, they had been more in that $350,000 range up to $400,000. But the tax burden alone is another $350,000. So our carrying cost on a monthly basis there is about $57,000, almost $58,000 a month. So you are point on about the, you know, the drain that that has been. And of course, we've nearly exhausted most of the funds that the MRO had for future capital investments, things like that were built into the lease agreement with AAR. So it will free up DITA significantly to focus on our real mission, which is economic development. And as much as I would have loved to have seen, you know, the 350 jobs that we had up there with AAR, the reality is I wish we had 300 more over at the paper mill, but things have changed and evolved, and Cirrus has a need, and they have a vision to create this innovation center, and it is a great outcome for our community and for Cirrus. It's really a win-win to move this forward and to take the burden off of DITA and allow us to focus more on economic development going forward. So yes, we are, you know, the DITA board has been tracking with this. You know, we haven't asked for the lease execution because they are making applications to the JCF and to the Minnesota Investment Fund, and they are contingent upon them receiving that before we can execute a lease. Otherwise, I think Cirrus would be all over moving forward with the lease based on really a long negotiation where we've gotten to, and I think we do have a win-win, and we are excited to partner with Cirrus and to provide this space for them to really reimagine that whole building. So we're excited. But so would ask the council to obviously, you know, approve the resolutions and to approve the tax abatement. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Fleach. Looks like we got two more questions that popped in here quick. So Councillor Randorf, I believe you were first. Councillor Randorf,
thank you so much.
There we go.
Okay. Thank you, President Forsman. You happened to ask my holding cost question, so thank you for that. Having sat on DITA as a commissioner for the last 2 years, I've had the opportunity to watch as we tried to fill that MRO with various tenants. And so very excited. I don't have a question, but I just wanted to, if Mr. King isn't at the Monday meeting, thank him. Thank Mr. Bill King for coming and giving us a little bit more context around this. Finding the perfect tenant for this building is very important. And as President Forsman clearly uncovered, it would allow us to, as DITA, invest $700,000 a year in other projects. So I just wanted to say thank you, Mr. King, for being here.
President Forsman and Councillor Randorf, thank you. I'm glad you brought that up. The difficulty in moving, getting somebody else in. I actually sat with Chris and the whole team with the airport folks and everybody on a number of those presentations, trying to attract another MRO to the facility. Even as MROs go, it's an oddball. So boy, we tried everything, and I mean, honest to goodness, I was so proud of my city and my economic development team trying to bring an MRO into that complex. You have no idea the number of hours invested to do that, or maybe you do, but it was really a labor of love doing it together, because we benefited by having an MRO there ourselves, because it meant that we were able to attract a lot more DARs and DERs and other A&Ps and, you know, mechanics, qualified mechanics to the region. That helps us. So we have a vested interest in being teamed up with you. Now we've just grown to a point where we're kind of glad it didn't work. And now maybe we can figure out how to make that facility work for us more directly. So thank you for saying so. And I'm honored to be here. I truly am. I'm on the backside of my career here, but I got to tell you, it's just been my honor to be a small part of building that facility. But I got to tell you, you guys at City Hall have made it a labor of love, and you've made it, you've made my career path at Cirrus really special. So, you know, I all the way back to Gary Doty and him just doing yeoman's work, figuring out how to get Congressman Oberstar and everybody else to help support the project in early days when they probably had good reason not to. And we're just so grateful for the history that you guys have. As you played a critical role, the city and the DITA has played a huge role in our success. So we owe you a thank you. So thank you from myself specifically, but certainly every one of our senior management team. We're proud to call this home. We really are.
Thank you, Councilor Randorf. Councilor Tamana.
Thank you, President Forsman. I just want to take a quick minute. Mr. King did a great job in the presentation. He talked a little bit about community benefit. And speaking as a representative of like Superior College, their aviation program really benefits Cirrus, and Cirrus very graciously gives back to Lake Superior College in the form of large scholarships. So there's this way that we train people to have jobs at Cirrus. It's just this community benefit that keeps rolling along, and it's a great partnership. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Tamanik, and I will echo the thanks, Mr. King, for you giving your time tonight and joining us. Appreciate that. And if there are no further questions, we will say goodbye, and we will move on to the last time that Councillor Medved reads in under Public Works and Utilities.
Thank you again.
Thank you. President Forsman, you are correct. It is my last time at an agenda session, so thank you for that honor. Item number 24, Resolution 132, is a resolution of intent for construction of a sanitary sewer extension to serve lots 13 and 14, Block 11, all in first rearrangement in Congdon Park Division of Duluth, and to assess the cost thereof. Item number 25, Resolution 134, is a resolution authorizing an agreement with MSA Professional Services, Inc., for engineering services to provide an operation and needs review study for the Woodland Booster Station Improvement Project in the amount of $72,964. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Councillor Medved. Seeing no councillors in the queue, we will move on to Councillor Anderson and Public Safety.
Thank you, President Forsman. Resolution 118.
I'm sorry. Councillor Mayo, did you have a question?
I did, if that's all right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. Thank you, President Forsman. Yeah, I just had a question on Resolution 132. I was wondering just what the general nature of that sanitary extension is. Is it two new properties? It was a little hard to understand from those documents.
President Forsman, Councilor Mayo, as I understand it, it is a shared public main. And so in those situations, when there's that extension is a connection point for multiple properties. And so if you'd like more information, more specifics, I'm happy to ask Public Works staff to pull that together for you.
That would be great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Councillor Mayo. And sorry, Councillor Anderson, please continue.
Thank you. All right. Resolution 118, authorizing proper city officials to execute a police enterprise records management system subscriber agreement with the City of Hermantown to provide the Hermantown Police Department access to the City of Duluth's RMS for an annual estimated fee of $21,356. Resolution 133, authorizing proper city officials to accept a grant from the State of Minnesota in the amount of $12,365.60 for hazmat training, and further authorizing execution of a grant agreement with the State of Minnesota.
Thank you, Councillor Anderson. And seeing no councillors in the queue, we will go to Councillor Tamanik.
Thank you, President Forsman. Resolution 130, authorizing application to the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources for a federal recreational trail program grant of up to $150,000 for rehabilitation of snowmobile infrastructure in the Spirit Mountain area. Resolution 131, authorizing application to the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources for a federal recreational trail program grant of up to $150,000 for construction of segment 6 of the Cross City Trail. Resolution 135, authorizing an amendment to agreement L30210 with TRC Environmental Corporation for additional engineering services for the stormwater outfall located near 7428 Condon Boulevard as part of shoreline repairs from the October 2018 storm for an increase of $17,339 and a new total not to exceed $677,609.45. Resolution 139, authorizing an ML Link server site agreement extension, extending the term of an agreement with the Regents of the University of Minnesota through the University Libraries related to the Minnesota Library Information Network from June 30th, 2022 to June 30th, 2024. Resolution 144, authorizing application to the Conservation Partners Legacy Metro Program for funds to acquire 83.2 acres from the Forest Hill Cemetery for recreation and preservation. Resolution 146, authorizing application to and acceptance of a Minnesota Recreation and Parks Foundation grant, fiscal year 2022, an amount not to exceed $3,981 for programming equipment. Resolution 148, authorizing an amendment to agreement L30568 with KFI Engineers for Building Control Design for the City Hall Mechanical, Electrical, and Plumbing MEEP renewal project for an increase of $198,000 and a new total amount not to exceed $948,300. Resolution 50, authorizing a five-year agreement with the Greater Downtown Council for operation of advertising and signage in the downtown Skyway system. Resolution 152, authorizing acceptance and execution of a one-year host site agreement with True North AmeriCorps for placement at the Duluth Public Library at a cost of $6,950. Resolution 155, authorizing an amendment to agreement L30521 with LHB Engineers and Architects for landscape, architectural, and coastal engineering design services for Duluth Lake Walk and Brighton Beach for an increase of $299,864 and a new total amount not to exceed $347,887.
Thank you, Councillor Timonic, for all of those. Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Forsman. I had a question about Resolution 155, that last one there. I'm just curious about, since it was an increase of $299,000 for the total about $350,000, I was just curious about that significant increase and what that would be related to at the Brighton Beach project.
President Forsman, Councilor Mayo, Director Philby Williams is, I believe, on the call and will be able to fill in the blank there.
President Forsman, Councilor Mayo, thank you for the question. This is not actually a contract overage in the normal sense. Rather, it is authorization of a pre-planned phase two of design work. And so their proposal included phase one for pre-design and then phase two for construction drawings. And proceeding to phase two requires an additional council authorization, and that's what we're asking you for at this time.
Great. Thank you very much for that context.
Thank you, Director Philby Williams and Councillor Mayo. And I'm not seeing any other questions, so that takes us to the end of resolutions. We'll get into ordinances to be read for the first time, and back to Councillor Randorf.
Thank you, President Forsman. Ordinance number 9 is an ordinance granting St. Louis County Property Management, the Depot, a concurrent use permit for canopy improvements in the platted street right-of-way of West Michigan Street, adjacent to 506 West Michigan Street.
Thank you, Councillor Randorf. We have a question from Vice President Kennedy.
Thank you, President Forsman. I'm just wondering why we need an ordinance for a canopy. And I'm guessing there's one there already. Is that correct? Or is this in another area? And I guess I'm thinking of the one right off, the one that crosses over to go to the deck.
President Forsman, Vice President Kennedy. This is related to the drive-through pull-off for the depot. And I'm not sure if Director Fleeg is still on the call. It does not look like he is. And so if you'd like additional information, we can follow up with you offline.
I have a follow-up question, and maybe that one needs to be sent to me as well. Did the Planning Commission, did this go to Planning Commission and then comes to us? Is that correct? Or does it come directly to us?
President Forsman, Vice President Kennedy, I honestly am not able to speak to that part of the process.
Mr. Sheckman, there is a note in the statement of purpose that it was held at the public hearing was at the Planning Commission, and it was voted 7-0 to approve the request.
Thank you.
All right, Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Forsman. Just a follow-up question to that, and Mr. Sheckman, you may not know the answer to this either, but does this have anything to do with conversions that are being made in advance of the potential Northern Lights Express with this pull-off, or is it just mostly for the current purposes that the depot is serving?
President Forsman, Councilor Mayor, it is for current purposes. As I understand it, there is no work being done at this point on Northern Lights Express other than prepping for the potential eventuality, but certainly no infrastructure or construction work at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Sheckman. All right. Ordinances to be read for the second time. We'll go first to Councillor Van Nett.
Certainly, President Forsman. Item 39, resolution, ordinance 8, sorry. Ordinance amending section 2-2.3 of the Duluth City Code 1959 as amended regarding minimum job qualifications for deputy fire chiefs. Item 40, ordinance 2, an ordinance amending chapter 5, section 36 of the Duluth Home Rule Charter 1912 as amended, changing the maximum number of appointed deputy fire chiefs from 2 to 3.
Thank you, Councillor Van Nett. All right, and now back to Councillor Randorf.
Thank you, President Forsman. Ordinance number 6 is an ordinance amending the RP zone regulating plan for Ramsey Village, affecting 5 lots on the west side of North 53rd Avenue West, north of Ramsey Street, and 5 lots on the east side of 54th Avenue West, north of Ramsey Street, to replace the currently allowed building types with building types 1, 6, and 7 that allow one family detached residential structures, 4-unit multifamily residential structures, and 8-unit multifamily residential structures. Number item 42, ordinance 7, an ordinance granting WBI Visa LLC a concurrent use permit for an existing stairwell within the platted right of way, North 28th Avenue West, adjacent to 2801 West Superior Street.
Very good. All right, Councilor. Oh, I see Councilor Van Nett, you have a question.
I don't have a question on these. I have something afterward.
Okay. All right, we'll come back to you then. I see Vice President Kennedy had her hand up too.
Thank you, President Forsman. This is for city staff as I look back at the amendment resolution for NLX. On the very end of the statement of purpose, it's just a hanging E, unless that's just on mine. But if you could just take a look and remove that. So sort of a typo or an extra E hanging around at the statement of purpose. So thank you. I'll yield.
Thank you, Vice President Kennedy. All right. Well, that takes us to the end of our agenda. So we'll go back to you, Councillor Van Nett.
Thank you, President Forsman, councillors, and Councillor Vice President Kennedy. I love the extra E. Let's leave it in there. councillors, and anybody who's listening, I want to take an honorable second to tip my hat to the former Mayor Bergson, who passed recently, and I want to share a little bit about that process, which is always hard, but in somebody, with my experience working with him, he was and seeing him in the community, I recall seeing him. He made a really important appointments especially to the chief then, Chief Ramsey then, but other folks in the community who, little kids particularly, would climb all over him. And I always thought a lot about him because he had those kids walking in parades with him and they just loved him. And I thought, that's pretty amazing. And to watch his ripple effect, how he affected us today with LGBTQ rights and all these different things he pushed together. And I thought, that's some ripple effect leadership that I just have to commend and talk about and share about, because those things are tough to do. And it takes hardcore leadership to be able to do those things. So I wanted to officially and honorably tip my hat, habeas counsel, to him and his passing in the spirit world. And he will be happy there, I can guarantee that. Thank you, counselors.
Thank you, Counselor Bennett. It was sad to read this morning, and certainly condolences to his family. Counselor Randorf.
Thank you so much, President Forsman. I just wanted to bring up a real brief conversation. Is this a good time, President Forsman, for comments, or should we wait?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I didn't specifically say we're now to the point for questions and comments, but we are. So go ahead.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much. Just bring up a brief conversation that I'd like you to consider that might result in a recommendation to maybe update our processes or our charter in filling our preterm council seats. You know, we all know that losing a counselor through either, you know, personal emergency or resignation is not ideal. We're in that situation. We've been in that situation now twice over the last couple of years. In Section 4 of our city charter, it addresses really that process. And, you know, we know it's going to be an interview process. We appoint through a vote. And then if we're tied, we do actual coin toss. And so I may want to, you know, challenge us to maybe reflect. What I was asking Attorney St. George about is, can we have that interim seat just until the next special election? Or do we have to wait for the municipal? It sounds like we do have to wait, which means in this case, the person will run the full 2 years left of Councilor Medved's term. Wondering if we should make an adjustment to that so that the next special election, which would have been this November, we would have then allow the citizens to make their choice for that seat filling instead of us councilors. Just wanted to open that up for thoughts. And as I look into perhaps making some recommendations that we make that change. Thank you. I yield.
Thank you, Councillor Randorf. I see a couple of councillors popping on. I might kick this over to Attorney St. George at some point too. Councillor Vanette.
Thank you, President Forsman, and for this conversation. I was looking about process, and I always appreciate that process as we're doing this job. And I've heard, as we've been seeing emails and this process coming forward, and I happen to be in the seat to have that work going forward as my position. I want to point out some things about this process that may look different to other folks. So Native folks, persons of color, other folks may not have the same footing as other people would in learning this process, because this process isn't welcoming to people like me, poor folks, and or maybe some Black folks. And I hate to stereotype that stuff, but I live this particular situation, and I want to make sure I don't have an issue with somebody in some of the contexts and emails that we've been seeing about somebody running again. That's not my position to say anything about them or that in this particular process. And I want to stand up here today for folks like me that wouldn't have an in unless they've figured out and tried to figure out this process. It's not always readily available for people like me. And also in other situations, counselors have the freedom to particularly tell other counselors how to speak and or act. And it's up to us as an elected official to take that feedback or not. And it's up to us who have earned our certificate to vote for somebody that is a peer to us and could be and or replacement the best that we can. So I want to make sure that is lined out well while we always hear I mean, the town is 94% white, so, right, we're going to hear a lot about it. And so as a person of color, Native woman who doesn't have, never had to step up, that would have been great to learn the process because it's unfair. So those things there, and I also want to make sure to understand that past counselors we've had were appointed and ran, and they get to do that, and they get to have that as well as the next person gets to do that. So I want to share that part of it and some of the responses to the emails I've had and responded to in this system, and making sure folks understand those things to not look at the entire picture and not just one certain way about it. So just wanted to share that and have further discussion if we need to. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Van Nett. Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Forsman. And if Attorney St. George is here, I know, President Forsman, you had mentioned bringing her into this conversation. I was just curious with what Councillor Randorf mentioned of the feasibility and maybe like potential costs of us running a special election in the this coming year and what that might look like. And I don't know if that would have had to been brought about before this point, or if we're still able to, since we have many months until the November elections, if we would be able to put that process into place, if that's what the council decided or the Charter Commission decided.
Can you hear me now? Still can't hear me?
You're unmuted.
Yeah, I can hear you. I'm trying.
We had mic issues earlier with Attorney St. George. I don't know if they've been resolved, but I see you've popped on, Mr. Sheffman.
Thank you, President Forsman. I would be happy to ask staff to look into that question about the impact of the election. Obviously, this is a state election year, and so there will be an election happening that we will be administering under in our normal process. And so my assumption is that there's not a significant change to that cost that there would be if we were not having an election this year. But I will happily check in with Clerk Johnson about that. I mean, he's obviously on this call, and we'll hear that. And then, frankly, Director Van Tassel, assuming his appointment is approved on Monday, can work with Clerk Johnson on that to find out more information for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sheffman. Vice President Kennedy.
Thank you, President Forsman, and thank you, Councilor Van Nett, for voicing that. I'm speaking from a place where I've been in the appointment process twice, and I've actually run the appointment process. And I would tend to agree that we need to be careful in building policies that will not allow everyone to become a counselor or the opportunity to maybe be not elected, because being elected is a lot of work and running for office is a lot of work. But an appointment process takes some of that away and gives an opportunity for individuals who probably normally wouldn't even come forward. So I would just caution to maybe add more barriers for other people to be in this position and to serve that we are in. The policy itself is really, really hard. And if we add it again to this, I think we're going to miss out on a lot of voices that will come forward. And maybe some of the voices that we'll see coming forward or we've seen will not become a counselor right away, but it's certainly voices we need to hear and voices that can become maybe down the road, right? So I went and became a planning commissioner. Now I'm a city councilor, and now I'm vice president. The last time I went to the appointment process, President Forsman came number one and I came in number two, and now we're president and vice president. So I just want to be careful and really echo what Councillor Van Nett said in looking at the process, not as a process, but looking at it as who will come forward and step into that role. We don't know. It could be the next president or somebody. So I would just be cautioned as far as what you would like to bring forward, President Randorf, and maybe we could work together on that, but something to think about. I'll yield.
Thank you, Vice President Kennedy. Councillor Tamani.
Thank you, President Forsman. I would ask, Mr. Shuckman, could you also direct staff to let us know how other cities handle this in Minnesota and maybe other forms of government, what other levels of government, how they fill, not how they fill positions, how people who have been appointed, if they run for the full term or if they hold a special election, how that's handled in other areas of government. Thank you.
President Forsman, if I may, Councillor Tamani, that's an extremely broad ask, and I suspect you're not looking for every city, but I was curious if you would be willing to give us a little more specificity on what you're looking for.
Sure. Could we have three cities of our size in Minnesota with how they conduct this process, and maybe also our state senator and representative positions, how they are filled, just to see before we start making changes. So I'd like to know how other governmental agencies handle it.
Thank you, Councillor Tamani. Councillor Anderson.
Thank you, President Forsman, and thanks for the good questions on this important topic, councillors. Just an FYI, I did reach out to a resource that's available to all of us, which is the League of Minnesota Cities website. And I just went in there and asked, sent in a question. And I did it at 8 o'clock in the evening, I think on Thursday night, on Monday night. And they were back to me by 10 a.m. the next morning when I asked. So the question that I asked was about, are there other cities that during the appointment process specifically banned the opportunity for applicants or appointees to run for election? And so this is pertinent to what we're talking about here. But the response that I got was that a city council, this is according to the researcher at LMC, a city council has no authority to limit the ability of anyone to run for election. And then that no other city in the state of Minnesota, to the best of their knowledge, at LMC, has any process involved that would limit someone's ability to run. And I know that's not exactly pertinent to the discussion tonight, but I think it's important because it is a question that has been brought up by community members. It is also, I think it's a valid question for us as councilors to ask of applicants while they're in the process. And in the second round of the interview with the finalists, we will definitely, each individual counselor will have the opportunity to question the applicants about that if we choose to. So, but I am curious, Councillor Randorf, about your original question about is it possible to hold the special election in this coming year? And maybe it's not, maybe it's too late for this particular round, but maybe it's something that we can look at. So thank you for bringing that up, and I will yield. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Anderson. Good League of Minnesota Cities shout out and reminder. That is a great resource, and kudos to Councillor Owl, who just went to a conference for League of Minnesota Cities. That was also the point I was just going to add, and since you brought it up, I'll just go there now, and then we'll go back to Vice President Kennedy and wrap up here. But the issue around timing, I think there's the appointment in front of us, which Councillor Medved, thank you for that. And then there's the long-term process with the city charter. I don't know if it's relevant here, but what I would ask Attorney St. George, since she can't respond, but she can hear us, is just helping clarify for process. My assumption would be that we would fall under the current city charter for a vacancy that is created while that city charter is in place. And that if there was any intent to propose changes to that charter, that change would have to occur before a vacancy occurs for those new rules to take effect. So that's my long way of raising a question that I think will confirm that there probably isn't an opportunity to change the term for the vacancy that will be created with Councillor Medved's resignation, but I would like Attorney St. George's answer on that to be sure that that's the case. And then just thanks for the discussion overall, and Vice President Kennedy.
Thank you, President Forsman. I guess I wanted to follow up, I apologize, with Councillor Anderson's thoughts about the League of Minnesota Cities, and that can we really ask somebody not to run? Is that a civil rights issue? I think we should probably get that question answered. And just really more conversation off of Councillor Bennett's thoughts about if a person of color is appointed, it makes it a little bit easier. Not easier, it actually will probably make it an even playing field because they've had an opportunity to be here and to understand what it's like. And so if they were to go out and run, I think it would be equitable. If we think and remember the boxes of equity and the different levels, I just wanted to share that. And then just a reminder that Councillor Medved would be running next year. So it's a 1 year appointment, I believe.
It would. So the current city charter, Vice President Kennedy, does specify that you would run the election at the next municipal election. So Councillor Medved's term expires in January of 2024. So that's when the appointed councillor's term would expire as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Well, this is why we do these things in open meetings, and it's not always easy to have a conversation that's not on our agenda, but it's timely. So thank you all for hanging in there. I believe I don't have the council schedule in front of us, but we do have a presentation by Mindy Granley, I know, before our next meeting on Monday. So please show up for that. There might be something else there as well, but I appreciate everybody's time tonight, and we are adjourned. Take care.
Do not let her answer.
I mean, what's going on with it, do you think?
I think the problem is that this